From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Okay, my anal retentive colleagues get a bit pernickety when I forget to say this, so here you go. This is show number 72 of The Dice Men Cometh on Thursday the 21st of May. You know, really, if I'm going to complain about anal retentiveness, I'm in the wrong place. I mean, it's the wrong show. It's the wrong hobby because tabletop gamers live for anal retention. It's how we prove that we are better than non-gamer folk is by retaining things in our anus.
Nothing wrong with a bit of OCD.
And on that note, welcome to the show. My name's Trent.
I'm Mark.
I'm Garth. And it also helps you play those really long games, not having to leave the table after 4 hours.
Oh dear, coming up on the show tonight, the King of Dead Air is going to lead us through what we've been playing. We're going to talk about all the game awards that are happening today and on other days. There's so much happening there with game awards. We've got the iOS games for people who don't have the anal retentiveness and need to go to the toilet and play those games. And we've got a fabulous interview with Charles Bishop from the Australian Toy and Game Expo. He's going to tell us about that and also about the Australian Board Game Championships. Needless to say, I don't think he invited Trent to come along because...
Hey!
They want winners!
Harsh!
All that and more!
Very harsh. Okay, fantastic news during the week. Iron Maiden's lead singer Bruce Dickinson cleared of cancer.
Woohoo!
And free to work on a new Iron Maiden album that no one wants or cares about because we're all too busy still listening to the stuff from the 80s like this one. This, two thumbs up, ladies and gentlemen, is Aces High. Back in the day, they called him the human air raid siren. Bruce Dickinson and Iron Maiden on the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Welcome back for another Thursday. Last Thursday, of course, my birthday.
Yeah. Really?
And gentlemen, just thanks again for making it special. But we did have a few more people around at my house after the show than what I'm used to, so we didn't get a chance to play Tolkien.
No,
which,
what a surprise.
We've determined Max is out at 4 players, maximum number of players, so I think it's just 3 of us tonight, isn't it? So, hey.
That's all right, I can get on Facebook and Twitter and I can get some more people.
Oh.
Don't worry.
Well, maybe we can play Deus.
Yeah.
The game you bought me, because it looks good.
Excellent, and you've read the rules.
I have.
And we can sing. Amadeus, Amadeus, rock me, Amadeus.
Or we cannot do that. What else have we been playing lately?
Well, good thing is Mark's microphone wasn't on then. So what we've been playing this week, we have played a game about being a samurai, which everyone wants to be, don't you? Yes.
Yeah,
okay,
of course,
good.
Yeah.
You do? Awesome. Yeah?
Even Tom Cruise.
Are they the guys that commit seppuku every now and then?
Only if you fail.
Hmm.
So we've been playing Samurai Spirit by Anton Bowser. You may have heard of him because he has developed Trent, Seven Wonders.
Yes.
We've got Tokaido, we've got Ghost Stories, Hanabi, Terror in Meeple City, or Rampage, which... Takenoko. So he's got a bit of a history behind him.
And I think it's fair to say that expectation was high for this title
Definitely. Yeah. And look, big ups to Funforge for publishing this. It was only released in 2014, so it's a really quite new game. And I love the fact it goes from 1 to 7 players.
Yeah,
it's a really versatile game.
Well, it's essentially Seven Samurai the game.
It is, yeah. So basically what you're doing is everyone's going to choose a character. And you'll be happy because it has double-sided character board technology. So it's got everyone's got an animal side on one side, which is your beast and where you've leveled up. But you've got your standard human side. And I just want to start by saying I think the art on this is really, really awesome. I think Victor Perez Corbella, who has done work for Relic, Dead Panic, Smash Up and Space Hulk the Card Game, it's done a really good job with the art.
Yeah, look, I mean, game aside, I actually hate the art, frankly.
Really?
In Samurai Spirit, yeah.
I think Victor Perez Corbella does a fantastic job in this. I love it. I'm sucked right in.
I'm sorry. I think there's poor anatomy on the cards of the characters. Some of the perspective is off. And, you know, generally speaking, the theme on this works, but it is a bit pasted on.
Well, of course
it just works.
Well, look, let's talk about it, because all you're doing is you are seven samurai, and your job is to defend the village from this raid of bandits or raiders or thieves or whatever you want to call them. And basically, it's a really simple co-op game. And what I love about this is the majority of co-op games that we play go for 1 hour, 2 hours, a little bit longer.
Complicated beasts.
But this one, we get a game under, 45 minutes, maybe an hour, if it's a really long game and we're actually doing quite well, which is quite rare.
It does fill an interesting niche, doesn't it?
It does. I think it was really nice. And it's a lovely small little box as well, so it doesn't take up a huge amount of space on the cupboard or in your backpack, so it can be taken. But how do you play it? Well, basically what you do is, on your turn, you're going to just do one of three things. The first thing you're going to do is apply any battle penalty that you've had, and that will have happened after you've started fighting people. You're then going to draw the top card from the raider deck, and all you've got to do is decide, do I want to fight this guy? Do I want to support and not really fight him, but give my special ability, because each of the seven players has a special ability, or do I want to defend against this guy, which it doesn't count against your battle track, but it does give you bonuses at the end of every round. And I like the fighting mechanic where every character has basically their ki, which is their maximum hit points before they have something special happen.
We've been arguing about how this is pronounced.
Yes. Now, I did...
Because I insist that it's pronounced ki.
You very well may be correct here, but I just thought I would look it up on the internet, and it did quite clearly say K-E-Y... space EYE.
Said that on the internet.
It did say it on the internet.
Oh, must be true.
Internet must be true. And it's really, really simple. We managed to pick it up in a couple of minutes, with some very basic rules explanation, and it went round really, really quickly. I really enjoyed the fact that you've got a couple of simple decisions to make. Do I want to fight this because I need to get my ki level up, because when I get to my maximum hit points, I'm going to be able to defend the village a bit better. I'm going to have to be able to build a barricade or do something that'll affect the raider stack or what have you. I thought that was really interesting. But I also liked that you are trying to take a certain amount of damage for your character because you want them to flip to their animal side where you become bigger and stronger and tougher. What do you guys think about that mechanic? I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I also like the support mechanism. And one of the, I think, more interesting decisions in the game is, do I want to support and effectively miss a turn but provide an extra advantage for one of my colleagues, or do I want to fight and build up to give me that chance to flip over? And that decision also around, well, it's great to flip over, but that also means I'm half dead.
Exactly.
There's a lot of tension there, and I think, look, I saw a picture on Board Game Geek of Anton Bowser holding a sign saying, it's not ghost stories, but it's just as difficult.
Yep.
Which gave me a chuckle, because it is tricky, and we have seen on the couple of times we've played it, first round, hey, we're blitzing it. Second round, yeah, we're blitzing it. Third round, we're dead. Like, just about every time, and we're not playing on the hardest levels even.
Because it does get progressively tougher as those rounds go through and you adjust the deck with more of the big bad guys.
Exactly. So for round one, you've got a deck of about 50-odd cards, but the first deck is just seven cards per player, and the raiders there are your entry-level grunts. Their strength is from 1 to 4, and you know there's going to be seven of them per player in the deck.
Hmm.
Second round, it's the same deck of cards, but you then add lieutenants, which add a strength of 5 to the whole equation, and that's 1 per player. And then on the last round, the third round, you also get the bosses who are strength 6, which are pretty strong, because when you look at the players, I guess, ki, or their hit points,
it's pronounced
ki.
You only have between maybe a ki of 8 and 11.
Yeah.
So if you've got a boss of 6, that's used up more than half, maybe 2/3 of your life. So that then makes every other decision you make in that round really, really tough. Do I want to flip this card? Do I want to support? What do I do?
And I think after I sort of dwelled on it a bit after the last game, it seems like it's probably critical to actually get flipped over before you get to that third round, because a 6 plus almost anything is going to blow you out in the last round.
Exactly right.
And just the timing of that is a tricky thing.
Yeah, because once you're at that level where I've got to flip a card, but it's going to be a 1 or a 2, otherwise I'm going to be knocked out, it does make the rest of your round a bit redundant. You've really got to make that decision quite interestingly.
It's an innocent enough looking little box, but it's a game that's a lot tougher than what you might imagine.
Yes.
We've played it 4 or 5 times. We've not won
Once.
No.
Once.
No. And then, we've been trying at the normal difficulty.
But then I've been playing it with you, so perhaps that contributes to something. I thought I might make that joke before anyone else did.
Thank you very much.
I think the trick is in that need to cooperate and the swapping of those powers. Mm. That I think that third round, it's so difficult. I think it probably comes down to one card per round the table, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really swapping those powers and just forfeiting your go to help somebody else deal with just one, the bad guys, just one enemy at a time.
Exactly right. And yeah. what I'd really like to do with this game is get it playing with maximum numbers, with seven, because at the moment when we're playing it with three or four, then we don't have all those abilities out on the table at once, which makes it really tricky at that second and third round. And we've got to say that, you know, the last time we played it, we decided to notch up the difficulty one setting, and we didn't even make it through the second round. We just got absolutely obliterated. Mm. But I really like the little central board, which is just this little, you know, picture of a village. It's very simple, but it conveys the message that you're trying to defend this city because you're trying to stop the fences being burnt down. You're trying to stop the farmsteads from being burnt down and the villages. It's, I think it's really, really cool. What I also did like about it, which is maybe just because I was playing it with Trent, is that even though it's a co-op, I felt like it was Trent's fault when we lost because he was the one who took that final wound and died.
Yes.
And look, that's not just because it was you, Trent. I think it was just the nature of the game. Is it's a solo experience flipping that card and deciding, but it has the greater ramification of, in this case, winning or losing the game.
If you're looking for a 30-minute co-op game that plays seven players, then there's not much else out there.
No, yeah, absolutely. And it's really, really fun, really good art. And plays really quickly, really simple to teach, and a lot of fun.
Coming up next, we speak to Charles Bishop from the Australian Toy and Game Expo, which has shifted to November. And Charles is one of the brains behind that expo, but he also sponsors BorderCon.
Ooh.
And may even be going there this year. And the Australian Board Gaming Championships and the heats, they're happening, well, not right now, but now.
One's already happened, but exactly. there's another couple of states to go.
All the details coming up on the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
That was Frankie Rose with Into Blue. You're with the Edge Men. The Edge Men? The Dice Men Cometh.
What?
On Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Goodness me, what has happened? Anyway, earlier this week, I'll segue into a conversation that Trent had with Charles Bishop from the Australian Toy and Game Expo.
A pleasure once again to talk to Charles Bishop, one of the big brains behind the Australian Toy and Game Expo, which is now coming up in November. We'll find out what that's all about in a minute. Charles, welcome to the Dice Men Cometh.
Hi, thanks for having me again, Trent. It's really good to actually be back and chat to you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And specifically, I wanted to get you in to talk about the Australian board gaming tournaments. Well, round one in Brisbane is already done and dusted. That happened in February. And you've got round two coming up in Canberra at the end of May. Tell us all about the Australian board gaming tournaments, please.
Oh, it's pretty exciting this year. I think we've got to a point where we've got some really good variety in our tournaments. So Settlers is looking good across the board for the next three sets of tournaments in the ACT on the 30-31 of May, New South Wales on the 13-14 of June, and Melbourne, which is obviously the Australian Championships this year, on the 27th-28th of June. Ticket to Ride, people that love that, we're playing three different boards. So we're playing America, Europe and India. So that gives a bit of variety there. We've introduced for Dominion the Prosperity enhancement as well. So we'll have both the base and Prosperity cards in there to give a bit more variety for Dominion.
Very good.
I think probably the big thing this year is it is the Triennial Rummy Cub Championships. So for those that love Rummy Cub, at the winner of the Melbourne Championships will get to fly to Berlin to contest the World Rummy Cub Championships in November of this year.
And the heats in Melbourne, the 27th to 28th of June, that coincides with the Australian Championship. Is that correct?
Well, they are. They're one and the same.
One and the same, right.
We basically run the state-based tournaments to give the winners of them some money towards flying down.
Fantastic.
To Melbourne.
Yep.
And then Melbourne is the championships. We've decoupled it from, we used to run them traditionally at the Toy and Game Expo, but
yeah,
because
yeah.
it's now in November... It doesn't tie in well with Essen, which is when the Carcassonne World Championships and Settlers and Rummy Cub are running. So we sort of decoupled the tournaments to run them separately, and given the response we've had, that seems to be still a great outcome.
More information is available online, and if you want to just give us the web address for that, please, Charles.
Yep, so it's tournaments.toyandgameexpo.com.au.
Mm-hmm. All the dates and all the prices and all that kind of thing are in there.
Yeah, everything there. Pay online, buy your ticket through PayPal on there. We're, you know, really happy to be working with the local game stores in each location. So in the ACT, we're working in with Games Capital.
In Garema Place, I assume you're clearing out that space upstairs there to play.
Yep. So Glenn and Phil have let us have that store, which is great. New South Wales, we're working with Lindsay Hemming in the Games Cube. Lindsay and Alex there. And then down in Melbourne, we're working with James from the Games Laboratory.
You know, I haven't even set foot in the Games Lab myself yet.
Oh, great venue.
Yeah, we're going there the night before we head up for BorderCon, and the guys have apparently promised to tap a keg for us.
Oh, look, it's very nice. He's done a good job with the bar downstairs and then the sort of gaming levels 2 and 3. So I think it's an all-you-could-want kind of venue right in the centre of Melbourne. So it's a great venue.
Charles, you bill these tournaments as being family-friendly events.
Yep.
Now, we all know that's bullcrap. How cutthroat are they?
Well, they are and they aren't. So, for example, my daughter has said that she's probably going to play in the ACT ones, which immediately ups the cutthroatedness by about 1,000,000%. She is a ruthless, ruthless woman. Love her. The way we structure all of the tournaments is we use what is called a Swiss system, and it basically floats players to their relative level of strength across the day. So if you win your first couple of games, you're going to be playing against someone else that's won their first couple of games. Conversely, if you lose your first couple of games, you're going to be playing against people who haven't won a game yet. We often have people say, oh, I'm not sure I'm that good. Well, Marie Johns won the Victorian Championships about 2 years ago, the week after she learnt Settlers. You know, and people were open about, you know, they were helping her through the day and things like that. She won it fair and square, but it is a friendly environment, and I think treated in the true way that Euro games, you know, really bring people together, that is actually what it's like. That said, if you're going for the top prize, expect some pretty stiff competition. And if you're in the finals, it's going to be a hard-fought final.
And that final, as you say, was traditionally held at the Toy and Game Expo, which is now in its fourth year in Sydney.
Yep.
New dates in November and new location at the Sydney Showground as well. What's going on here?
Well, we were in the Dome last year. This year we're in the halls, which are attached to the Dome.
Right.
50 metres, if you walk down through the centre of the Dome, you're in the halls. So it's all exactly the same location. It's actually where we were in year one.
Ah, gotcha.
Being a smaller family-run expo, we have less power over the showgrounds than some of the bigger ones do.
Mm-hmm,
so every now and then we get shuffled around a little as to exactly which hall and when and where we're in. Same location. Move to November. We think closer to Christmas. It is a time when people are looking to make their purchases for toys and games. So we've had year-on-year growth in numbers. Coming through the door, we had nearly 6,000 in 2 days last year. We hope closer to Christmas we'll get, maybe to that 8,000 or 10,000 people.
Well, look, we'll talk again closer to November, but I've got to think that a November date and the warm weather in Sydney at that time of year is going to bring lots of refugees from the Northern Hemisphere winter down to exhibit their wares, surely.
Look, getting anybody to Australia is difficult. It's a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, have you personally been to Essen yet?
No. So there you go.
Well, I think, whenever we go there, and we go probably every second year, just the concept of coming to Australia is a long way for people. So, but we've come up with some pretty novel ideas. And, you know, last year we had 4 or 5 new game makers. We had Mayday. We had Plaid Hat Games. We had Indie Board and Card Games were there last year, all of whom we've come up with some pretty innovative ways to fund their booths and to make sure their products on display. So it's growing.
And we look forward to hearing more about it later in the year for the Australian Toy and Game Expo in November. In the meantime, those board gaming tournaments are rolling out across the country, Canberra, Sydney and Melbourne. Let's see if we can get a Hobart one happening one year, Charles.
Find me a game store.
Oh, well, I can do that. I can do that. Let's have a chat off air.
All right, well, we'll do that off air. And for 2016, that'll be next year. Let's see whether we can get a Hobart set up.
All right, mate, good to talk to you, and best of luck with it all.
No worries. Thanks, Trent.
You heard it there first. Trent has negotiated us a series of heats for the 2016 Board Gaming Championship. Trent?
I think it's fair to say that it's under discussion. Okay.
Well, it sounded positive to me.
But thanks to Charles for the chat, and also big up to Charles for his sponsoring of BorderCon coming up the Queen's Birthday long weekend in Albury. And Albury, of course, the town where all this started. The Toy and Game Expo came out of Albury, moved to Canberra, now in Sydney.
Absolutely. It's an award-winning place, and we're going to come back and talk about more award-winning games right after this track.
What award has Albury won? Mercy.
Ah, yeah, so what? Apparently that's what that track is called, by Will Sparks, featuring Wiley and Ellen Levon. Fancy that. You're with the Iceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Mark's insistence that Albury had won some kind of award sent us feverishly to the interwebs. Can't find that Albury even once won a Tidy Town Award.
It's a city, though, isn't it? Not a town.
You may have me there, but you know what? Albury has gone and they've got their own Albury Awards.
So they should. It's a fantastic place.
To recognise and reward those who've selflessly dedicated their time and energy for the benefit of the city, you can submit a nomination now for Australia Day next year.
There you go.
Speaking of awards,
we have got some awards happening in our little hobby, haven't we?
Yes, we do. It's awards season in board gaming, and specifically, and most notably, I think the Spiel des Jahres nominations have just been announced this week.
Yeah.
To a global sort of reaction of,
meh. I think so.
And we got ourselves in deep trouble talking about the Spiel des Jahres last year, where we effectively accused the judges of corruption.
Ah, yes.
But moving on from that, I think it's fair to say, well, look, it's a bunch of games that no one in the English-speaking language is familiar with.
Oh, come on. Machikoro.
Well, I think the thing that people do lose track of is, even though it's seen as like an international award, it is the German game of the year. Germany being one of the places where a lot of games start. So some of the games that are in for the awards haven't been translated into English yet, and we haven't seen an English edition. Although, interestingly, you've got a couple of things like, and I just found out, Broom Service, which I was scratching my head thinking, what is Broom Service? I have that. It's an Aaliyah game. I've got that game. It's also known as Witch's Brew, and I've had that game for about 4 or 5 years. So sometimes these funny little things happen where, because they don't get a German translation, or this is in fact a re-implementation, you get the game appearing in a different guise.
Yeah, well, I find it weird because for some reason I just thought these would all be new games that are getting the awards, or at least the nominations, but it's not.
No.
And that's it's just, you know, I guess proof of how successful or where the... Sorry, Trent, yes?
Oh, well, it's their release into the German market that triggers it. And as we just discovered last year when we looked into it, that's really all about family games. And that's what this award is about. But that does come out, and the nomination period overlaps with that of the Dice Tower Awards, courtesy of Tom Vassell's big podcast, and also the Origins Awards, the Origins Games Fair, and the Board Game Geek winners have already been announced earlier in the year as well.
And so, there is some confusion because you've got the Dice Tower giving their 2014 awards, and then you've got the Spiel des Jahres for 2015, but both of them are looking at games effectively that were released in the last 12 months. Or I think the Dice Tower, I think they might actually have the cutoff being the end of the year. I'm not sure.
But yeah, they do.
They sort of come out together. So there's quite a bit of overlap, because in some of those, the Dice Tower Awards, for example, those games featured in last year's Spiel des Jahres.
So there's no synchronicity with this whatsoever.
No.
Nope.
And but what I thought I'd do is see if I could find some. Because I think it's fair to say that when you look at those Spiel des Jahres nominations, and I'm not going to just bother reading them all out because you can do that on the internet, but what I thought I'd do is I thought I'd cross-reference the winners of the Board Game Geek Awards with all the nominees.
Yes.
And see if some kind of theme emerged,
yeah.
If there's some kind of consensus that can be derived from all of this.
And look, just before we do that, I want to make a special mention, because they're not really covered in any of the other awards, I think, of the Kinderspiel, the kids' games.
Yeah.
And this is something that the Germans do, I think, that no one else in the world does, this level of kids' games. It's quite amazing. But I'll tell you what, if you want to see an interesting art choice, one of the nominated games, Fliegenschmaus, which is also known as Fly Feast. It's a game, it has little rubber flies. So four players each have four little rubber flies. I'm serious. And you're laying out tiles, and obviously the flies are getting to the feast. And the feast is the very last tile. Guess what's the image on the very last tile?
I'm guessing it's
huge dog turd.
Yes.
And that picture is actually on the front of the box. I look at this game and I'm like, surely not. That's not a huge turd on the front of the box. And yep. It is. So, Fliegenschmaus, check it out. And look,
kids would love that.
Oh, exactly. And look, you know, some of these games, I just love them. Fröschlein aufgepasst. That's Frog Watch Out. Or Schau mal, was ist anders?
Oh, Mark.
Is Look Here. What is different?
Racist.
So there's some fantastic games. I'll tell you, the one that I think is going to win, Push a Monster, which doesn't have a funny translation, but it's a dexterity game where you've got a table and you've got these monsters which are like wooden counters,
mm-hmm.
and you have to like put a new one on, push it onto the table with like a slidey ruler, and then you go around and you're trying to push your monster on and see if you can push other monsters off.
So monster shuffleboard?
Exactly. For kids 5 and up, it's fantastic.
All right, now looking to see if we can derive some kind of consensus. So from the four systems of awards that we're looking at, these are the games that have been nominated or won at least, well, they've got two mentions out of all of them.
Okay.
So in no particular order. Heroes of Normandy,
mm-hmm.
the World War II tile laying. Is it made up of little tiles?
I actually don't know that
okay. one. Okay, it was originally a Kickstarter. Battle of the Five Armies, which is the
Lord of the Rings,
the Hobbit miniatures game, has done quite well for itself. Abyss.
Yes, of course. We've talked about it a lot. We've played it. We really liked it. It's got the beautiful artwork.
Well, it's been nominated for artwork primarily. I don't know if that really counts in terms of making it a great game.
Hey, it's our good friend Bruno.
Exactly. And it's got an expansion coming out where the art also looks really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
The Spiel des Jahres recommended a game that won the Best Abstract Game with the Board Game Geek Awards, and that's Patchwork.
Yes. Okay. Oh, that's doing a quilt, isn't it?
Can I be honest? I don't know.
Great, good research
I went abstract game, Nonetheless, these are titles that are getting attention.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, this is maybe a good little short list of things to look at buying. Five Tribes.
Yeah, of course.
Which has been nominated for the Dice Tower Award. Imperial Settlers, Ignace Trevicek. Board Game Geek won the best solo game.
Okay.
And now we've got four more games out of all of these nominations and awards that have actually been listed three times. So these are the best of the best.
Yes.
Probably they won't surprise you too much. Splendor.
Yep.
Okay. Which was the Board Game Geek Game of the Year and is nominated with both the Dice Towers and the Origin Awards.
And should have won the Spiel des Jahres, of course, over Camel Butt.
Controversially. Dead of Winter.
Yes.
No surprises there. One of our favourites. Star Realms.
Oh, Mark, your favourite.
Yeah, like I've played it a bit. My son really loves it. And I know this is getting heaps of good press everywhere. For me, it doesn't stand out as a deck builder compared to many other deck builders.
No, well, I'm very tempted just to download it on the iPad and give it a shot. But, yeah, from the experiences we've had, I don't get it, personally.
And speaking of not getting it, Cash and Guns is the other big you know, notable entry in all of the in all of these awards.
And is that because it's a re-implementation?
Okay, yeah. So
that's been around for years.
So supposedly those are the best of the best of the award season. And one game that is really notable by its absence in there, although it was nominated or at least mentioned in the Spiel des Jahres, and that is Machikoro.
Yeah.
Which is a game that's been a big hit with all of us, and we think it's a great one that crosses over into the sort of family market. Simple enough for kids to play, but doesn't seem to get a lot of love from the hardcore gamers.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it does get poo-pooed quite a bit from the hardcorers who think it's just a pathetic little kids game almost.
Yeah.
I have to say, I really enjoy it. I've said it many times, I think it's, you know, it's a Catan killer for me. And, you know, the expansion mixes it up. There's a lot of variety there. I think, well, last year I would have said that Splendor was shoo-in for the Spiel des Jahres, and I was totally wrong. This year I'm going to put my money on Machikoro.
Yep.
Because Colt Express, have you guys played that? I know I've seen it being played at the Hobart Game Society.
No, I haven't.
I haven't played it.
No, I think it's obviously the quirk is the 3D little train and you're moving your meeples around there. I'd love to play it. Haven't had a go, but I don't know whether it's a one-trick pony or not.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a novelty appeal to me.
And then the other one, the game, which appears no one has heard of apart from Germany, although I did see W. Eric Martin give it a bit of a spin at Essen. But it's super simple. It's just cards from 1 to 99 that you're trying to discard out of your hands. A little bit of a Hanabi feel with that communication because it does have a co-op mode. But I was just blown away by the fact that this could even be mentioned.
What game was that?
It's called The Game.
Oh, is that what that
yes,
is?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It reminded me a bit of stuff like No Thanks and right. Six Nimmt, which I guess some of those games have won awards. We should give a special mention, of course, to a couple of Aussies that have been featured in the Spiel. Phil Walker Harding, who I believe, Garth, you're about to interview very soon.
We've got that lined up. Yes, we have.
His game, Cacao, is in the recommended list for the Spiel des Jahres.
Is that not pronounced cacao?
Or
cacao! I don't know. And look, the very exciting one, the one I'm most excited about, Matt Dunstan and his co-worker.
Matt Damon Epic?
Yeah. Brett Gilbert with Elysium. Now, you know, I've got a game of this booked in for BorderCon already. I can't wait to try it. So I think he's in with a real show of winning the Kennerspiel, certainly over the reworking of Witcher's Brew. Although the other one, Orléans. Is obviously a well-known Germany Euro game. So he could be sort of up against it with that one. But look, good luck to those guys. It's great to see some Aussies in there.
We often have a laugh behind the scenes at the Dice Men about the interview that Mark did with with Matt Dunstan around the around Elysium and talking about the potential Matt Damon expansion, which just completely fell flat with him. And like he had no idea what Mark was talking about.
I think it was fair to say thank God for video editing or for radio editing there. It's just get rid of that 5 minutes of
I was going to say, let's just say I edited the laugh to be much closer to the statement, that's for sure. Anyway, look, we'll be back after this to talk about some of the games you can play when you're on the toilet, as Garth does, or whenever you don't have your gaming friends around. We're going to come back and talk about that after this. The unmistakable sounds of architecture in Helsinki, that eclectic Australian group with the feather in a baseball cap. And we heard about a few people who were getting feathers in their caps for those awards. Now, before we move on with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, I do want to give a very, very special shout out to a very good friend of the show, Joe, who has undergone some serious medical attention today. Hopefully it's all finished and she's all better and we can't wait to see her at BorderCon well rested and ready to take us on because she does so often grind us into the dirt, particularly in Francis Drake, which she lovingly taught us. So Joe, get well soon. We're thinking of you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and also a shout out to a listener a little bit further afield, Steve O'Rourke, who resides in the US of A, actually Garth, you were chatting to Steve.
Yeah, I was. I was checking the emails like I do every so often, and was very happy to see that he sent us an email. Having listened to our most recent podcast, which was only last week, he mentioned two things that he was very, very happy with. The first thing was that we were getting take backsy cards sent all the way over to the USA.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. We've sent some over there. They are going as fast as Australia Post's carrier pigeons can get them there. But the second thing, which I thought was really just, I don't know, fortuitous, is that he's actually part of the Planetary Society, Mark, who is doing the light sail project that you talked about last week in your Kickstarter updates.
I know, that's just amazing that we have less than half a dozen probably listeners in the US, and one of them is involved in that amazing project.
Snap.
Exactly right, and I think it's really cool. So I looked into this project a little bit more because Mark didn't explain it very well, I thought. But look, basically it's a little project, and this is stage one, which they're going to fire this rocket up into, you know, the outer orbit or the space or what have you, and they're going to see how they can harness the solar winds and use that for transport. It's headed by Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah. So two very highly thought of science nerds. And for $35, you can buy one square inch of this little sail, and we could get Dice Men in space.
Steve, if you're listening, what I want is a picture of Neil deGrasse Tyson holding one of the Dice Men take backsy cards.
Definitely.
Please, that would make my life. That would be awesome.
Brilliant.
In fact, Garth's actually had an idea for the next piece of merchandise, Mark.
Oh, really?
He has, yes. Yeah.
Would you like to hear it?
Please.
So I was also listening to last week's podcast because I do that on the way to and from work. I think, what am I going to listen to and all the good stuff I've listened to? So I talk to our show.
May as well listen to myself.
Yeah, exactly right. And I came across a little bit of a repetition, like a word that I heard again and again and again.
A verbal tick.
A verbal tick, yes, very well described. And I have to say that Mark, this was one of your verbal ticks that I particularly noticed last week. And that tick was interesting. And I think the way we're going to proceed is I'm going to create some Dice Men bingo cards.
So every time Mark says the word interesting,
tick it off the list.
Or every time he comes out of a song and goes, that was.
Or every time Trent says, Meryl!
Or loses a game.
Yeah, exactly right. Or Seven Wonders, perhaps.
And every time there's dead air on the show.
Well, in that case, I think that'll be awesome, and there'll have to be a prize. First person to have their bingo card filled out. I'll make it happen.
Excellent. And let's say, speaking of segues.
Well, I have one for you.
Oh, right.
A survey, in fact, that was just announced, made some headlines earlier this week, a census survey of social media use in Australia found that Tasmanians are the most likely Australians to check into social media on the loo.
Really?
That's right.
Was that a survey of me?
Using mobile phones and iOS devices on the loo. Garth, it's time for an iOS update.
Well, and I was going to say, speaking of a man who works in the telecommunications field, we get many calls from people whose phones have gone in the water.
Oh, mm-hmm. That really?
And it's usually the toilet for that exact reason.
There you go.
I guess that is one good thing about an iPad, is that it doesn't quite so easily fit through an S Pen.
All right, speaking of going to the toilet, the game that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, which was Coup, which...
You don't mean... No, I'm not going to say
that. No, don't go there. The great thing is there's been an update on that, which has reduced the size of the app, but it's also reduced the size of each turn. It used to be 10 minutes. It's now only 2 minutes per round. So it's a lot more instant, which I think is... it's how Coup should be played. A lot more, you know, instant. I think that's a really good idea.
Well, you're either playing or you're going to the toilet, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so look, that's great. I mean, you play it, you get it done in 10, 15 minutes, and then you can move on. So that's I think, nice. I think I was on Twitter again the other day, and I was very happy to hear that Bezier Games has released an announcement of a release that's going to be happening in the third quarter of this year, which is Castles of Mad King Ludwig is coming to iPad and iOS.
Wow.
Yeah, which is awesome because they did do a really good implementation of Suburbia. It had a few sort of niggles at the start where it wasn't quite working, you know, optimally. But they promised that it's going to have a really good solo campaign, which again was one of the strengths of Suburbia, is you could basically do a solo campaign that would unlock more styles of play, more tokens and what have you. So they've promised that it's going to be a lot better. And really looking forward to that.
And interesting, I noted when we were looking back through the awards, we talked the other week about how Castles of Mad King Ludwig was a winner of one of the Mensa Select Awards.
Uh-huh.
When I was doing my research half-assedly last night, what I noticed was in 2013, Suburbia was also a winner of a Mensa Select Award. So Ted Alsbach knows what he's making when he makes good games.
Exactly right. Now, also, Trent, we were talking recently about your math trade. And one of the things you were asking about was Dominion, weren't you? You were going to try and sort of delve into that little game?
Yeah, you know, Dominion, certainly it's past its peak as a game in terms of sales. I've only ever played it myself, actually, a handful of times and thoroughly enjoyed it. Haven't had a chance to get sick of it, so...
Well, that's really good. Well, there's been a talk of an app for at least a couple of years. But what's been great is that they had a closed beta at the start of May, but they've now opened up live play on Macs and PCs, where you can basically go and play Dominion online at the moment, free to play, but then you can purchase, you know, booster packs and what have you. And then they're saying in the next month, hopefully, so by the end of June, they're going to have that released again for iPads. So that's going to be a really nice development. I jumped on there to have a look at it last night. Seems to have a nice, easy user face. You do have to log in to play for it, though. But it's free. PlayDominion.com, I thought, was good. It's a massive game in our hobby.
Will it cost money?
You can spend money if you'd like to, but you don't have to.
You buy cards.
Yeah, exactly
That's the model, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, I thought that was really, really cool. Have we got time for a little bit of a chat about Quarriers,
Go
Mark?
For it.
Yeah,
Go for
so
it.
Look, I downloaded the Quarriers app a couple of weeks ago. It was released only very, very briefly for a couple of days as a free download, and being a tight ass, I took advantage of that before it skyrocketed to $3.99. But this is a really cool little game. You know, Mark, you've got this game. I hadn't played Quarriers before. I played Dice Masters, and this is by Mike Elliott, who has done both. He's got a pretty good history. He also did Thunderstone, is that right?
Yes, and this Quarriers was the precursor to Dice Masters.
Yeah, and look, it plays really, really simply. It's a very simple dice building mechanic. You're all playing Quarriers, which you're, and I'm just going to read it here. You are a mighty mystical warrior who has the power to capture fearsome quarry to build up his army to fight against his opponents. The aim is to collect enough glory in the eyes of Quiana, the Empress of Quiridia, to be hailed as champion of the Empress. So, talk about theme.
It's dice.
Yeah, it's rolling dice. It's collecting dice and using the best ones to then be, you know, better and tougher dice.
Do they still have the Quiddity?
They do have the Quiddity, which is it's the currency in the game.
Yes, yes.
But look, the joy of it is it plays really, really quick in about 10, 15 minutes or so. You can play against various levels of AI, which allows you to, you know, tune your game depending on how good you are. You can pass it and play around the same iPad, so you can play against real live humans in your own toilet. You could all be in the same one, or you can be in your own respective toilets. And look, I had a lot of fun. It led me down the path of thinking, when are we going to get the Dice Men, you know, not the Dice Men, the Dice Masters app.
The Dice Men, Dice Masters.
But look, I thought it played really simply. It was really quick. It's only $3 or $4 now. You can get the expansion for it called Quarmageddon for a couple of bucks as well, which adds more dice and more spells and more monsters and what have you. Really simple, good fun, $3 or $4. I think it's a good buy.
One thing that's so important with your iOS rollouts is a good soundscape. Does it have good sound when you roll those virtual dice?
It has a good little sound. It's not completely all encompassing, but most of the time I have to play it quite quietly because I'm either playing it in bed next to my other half or trying not to drown out the TV that's blaring because we've got some kid shows going on.
Yeah, look, I just don't know. I think dice rolling games, you've got to actually roll the actual dice. But look, let's see. We've run out of time again. It's been fantastic.
I just want to let you know, Mark, your tally for today, 6 interestings.
you bastards.
That's a bingo.
Okay. Hey, well, I'll check out that user face later on. And we'll talk to you next week. We're the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark Trenegarth.
Good luck, Joe.
Take care.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.